This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
The president is apparently just not going to let this thing go. He amps up attacks against Jeff Sessions again. Good morning. Welcome into Tactics. Great to be with you on this Wednesday morning. And I say that having a greater appreciation than normal for being able to be here, because I'm reminded of the fact that I will not be here the rest of the week. And unfortunately, we do not have the full 2 hours. We have a short show today. Fortunately, we are going to be covering the Atlanta Braves. I didn't plan this, but I am decked out in Braves gear myself. You guys know what a huge Braves fan I am, and News Radio 1440 is your home for all of the action when it comes to the Atlanta Braves. This is gearing up to be really exciting at the end of the season, and we will bring you every single inning right here on News Radio 1440. We're very happy to be able to cover them, but it does mean that I will get less time with you, which is unfortunate. So we will be doing that in the second hour, but for the first hour, right here, News Radio 1440 Tactics, we have all the latest news on what's going on with the Jeff Sessions Trump conundrum, what's going on here. So I don't know what Kevin's outside trying to signal something to me. I have no idea what he's talking about. But anyway, let's actually dive into this story with what's going on with Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump. Unfortunately, this is something that the president seems incredibly unwilling to let go. I'm not sure exactly why that's going on, why this is happening, but this past week, the attacks have actually amped up again. One of the tweets that he released just the other day: two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought into a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms by the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. Two easy wins now in doubt because there is not enough time. Good job, Jeff. This has got to be, and keep in mind the context of what we're talking about here, I think this is one of the dumbest tweets that Donald Trump has ever put out, and I'm talking about Donald Trump. Now, I don't hate the president. You know that I have no animosity against him. I want his agenda to get done. But this does as much to not only harm Jeff Sessions, but fly in the face of all the work that Donald Trump has done, good work for the most part, that he has done for the country as anything. Because this leads a lot of credence to and strengthens the case of Democrats that can point to stupid things that he says like this and say, see, he does want to obstruct justice. He does want there to be a two-tiered justice system. He does want his Justice Department to play favorites and go after Democrats and go after his enemies and not those of his friends, because we know how often he has tweeted about Jeff Sessions and the Justice Department going after Hillary Clinton, going after Democrats that have had, for whatever reason, some kind of, something worthy of investigation. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, I don't know that he should necessarily be tweeting about it. I don't think that's necessarily the preferred medium. But when the president does comment and say that our Justice Department is going to look into X matter, that's not something beyond the scope of the presidency. He is the top law enforcement official in the United States of America, and he is not exceeding his authority or exceeding his constitutional duty by mentioning, hey, the Justice Department really should look into this. In fact, that's part of his job. But when he says stuff like this, basically suggesting that when it comes to Republicans, the Department of Justice ought to consider, are they up for re-election? Is this going to help us maintain the majority? Well, yeah, it looks like a crime was committed, or at least there's enough evidence to suggest a crime was committed. But let's just not look into it because, you know, the elections are coming up and it's going to be really hard for Republicans to retain a majority. No, that ought to absolutely, without any exceptions not be a consideration in the Justice Department. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. If the Justice Department starts taking into consideration how elections are going to line up and how their investigations are going to affect elections, we're in trouble. In fact, this is part of the problem that the FBI got involved in the last election. James Comey, through some circumstances that were beyond his control and some that he probably could have handled better, basically inserted himself and the FBI into an investigation. Now, the obvious solution to that is for one of the parties, yes, I'm looking at you Democrats, to not nominate somebody that is under FBI investigation as your candidate. And that's the part of the situation that I'm saying that Comey didn't have any control over whatsoever. And furthermore, not have your Democrat-appointed attorney general actually speak to the candidate's spouse right before they announce their findings. So I'm not giving an excuse to Democrats and some of the incredibly boneheaded, stupid mistakes that they made, nor am I saying that there was no favoritism from Obama's administration and his Justice Department, but at least they had the common sense to not go out and tell people on Twitter that they should, basically Obama suggesting to his Justice Department that there ought to be some considerations made as to whether or not this is going to affect the upcoming election when it came to investigations. Now, does that mean everything that the Department of Justice under Obama did was above board? Absolutely not. But they had the good sense not to announce when they were about to do something stupid. Or at least in Trump's case, Trump typically says a lot of things and it rarely comes to fruition, suggests that that should be a consideration to his attorney general. I mean, let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's say back before the 2010 elections, where there was a very good suggestion based on the numbers that the Tea Party wave was about to hit and Democrats were about to lose the House and also about to get some serious losses in the Senate. Let's just say that that were the scenario that we were looking at back in 2010. And all of a sudden we have President Barack Obama saying, Eric Holder, there are two investigations going on right now into Democrat senators that should have been easy wins. And now, because of your investigations, they might be losses. Good job, Eric. If he had said that, we would have absolutely hit the roof and should have. For President Obama to have suggested openly that maybe there should be some leeway given and maybe Eric Holder shouldn't really get involved in these investigations right when there's an election coming up, that would have been well beyond the pale and should have gotten all the ire that it would have gotten had that situation arisen. And when Democrats get upset at Donald Trump for suggesting stuff like this, I don't blame them. They're 100% right on this one. And also, it is just another backhanded way for President Trump to blame Jeff Sessions for several of his problems. And this does feed that Democrat narrative that Trump is willing to obstruct justice. Mr. President, if you want to appear innocent to the American people, act like you're being innocent. Act like you actually are innocent. And this whole idea that the Justice Department ought to be a political body that functions at the pleasure of the president's political preferences is beyond sickening. This is the kind of crap that goes on in dictatorships, where investigations and justice doesn't happen to reach the people that are the president or the dictator's political friends. This is not something that is acceptable or okay in the United States of America, and unfortunately, this is not as far as it went. He continues on in a follow-up to this tweet. The Democrats, none of whom voted for Jeff Sessions, must love him now. Same with lying James Comey. The Dems hated him and wanted him out, thought he was disgusting until I fired him, which, by the way, is in all caps, so I feel like I should almost read that as, until I fired him. Immediately, he became a wonderful man and a saint-like figure, really sick. Okay, now the second half of this tweet, not necessarily the wisest thing for him to tweet, but his point actually does kind of make sense. I mean, we do all remember that the Democrats hated James Comey. He was the reason that Hillary Clinton lost the election. He was the worst FBI director of all time. There's absolutely no question that he should be fired. And then all of a sudden, he gets fired by Donald Trump, and he's a man of incredible integrity and someone who's just looking for justice. They flip on this guy and expect every single person in the country to forget that 10 seconds ago they were talking about what a dog he was. It absolutely is mind-boggling, and on that particular note, I actually think that President Trump makes a very good point. All right, we'll talk a little bit more about this in just a second. 860-1440.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
My hopes of a future life are all founded upon the gospel of Christ. John Quincy Adams.
860-1440 is the number if you want to call in and let me know what's on your mind. There is also the option if you want to tweet me. You can do so at Tactics Radio. Love to read your tweets on the air. By the way, good news, and I will get right back to the news here in just a second, but good news, I was finally able to fix my computer. For those of you who didn't know, a lightning bolt actually fried my power supply, and I was afraid it fried my whole computer. Last night, I bought a power supply, replaced it, put it in my computer, which, by the way, very nice. Bronze label, 750 watts, so got a nice new power supply out of it, and it seems to be working fine. So my computer is finally back, which means the podcasts are back. So I will be having the podcast. You may have noticed if you've been on the website, the podcast have been several days behind. There is a good reason for that. My computer blew up and there was really nothing I could do about it because all my sound editing software is on there. But don't worry, we will have that back up and running and it should be back on the air. I'm hoping to get it all done by tonight because I spent most of last night fixing the PC. So it's all good. Everything's back and we should have the podcast up by tonight. And I got to tell you, looking at this story and sorting through everything that has been going on, unfortunately, the whole Trump versus Jeff Sessions found new light the other night. Trump is apparently personally lobbying senators to flip on him. This is based on a report by Politico. Several senators said that Donald Trump have approached them, specifically asking them to speak out against Jeff Sessions. And so it really is a massive, at the very least, let's give the absolute best case scenario and the absolute worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is that Donald Trump is actively trying to get Jeff Sessions to retire and trying to turn everybody in Washington, Republican and Democrat, against him. He seems to be willing to complain about Jeff Sessions to anybody that is willing to listen. The absolute best case scenario is that he just absolutely hates Jeff Sessions. The absolute worst case scenario is that he hates Jeff Sessions and is actually trying to get him removed so that he can appoint an attorney general that will fire Robert Mueller. If that happens, if Donald Trump gets what he allegedly wants and Jeff Sessions decides to retire and another attorney general is appointed and the first order of business is to fire Robert Mueller, then impeachment charges are going to be brought up, and there may even be some moderate Republicans that side with the Democrats into looking into obstruction. Does that mean that he gets removed from office? I highly doubt it. I highly doubt it specifically because it doesn't seem to me that Republicans are going to lose the Senate. And even if they do lose the Senate, they still need 66 votes, which there's no way that Democrats take 66, or I guess it would be 67 because they'd have to round up, 67 votes in the Senate to be able to remove Trump from office. But that is going to turn even some moderate Republicans against the president and say, okay, maybe there is a good reason to look into whether or not President Donald Trump obstructed justice. The truth is, oddly enough, Jeff Sessions is what's keeping Donald Trump from having that happen right now. To a limited extent. I wouldn't say that he's the only factor, but he's definitely playing a part in that. But what's also funny about this is that let's just look at the other side of that, the absolute best case scenario. At the absolute best case scenario, it's just a massive waste of Trump's time. This is time that he could spend doing other things that would presumably be really good for the country, negotiating other trade deals, which, you know, if he gets a better deal, then more power to him. You know, any of these other policy positions that he could be acting on and could be doing with his time would actually be far more productive if he would quit seeming to making priority one, slamming Jeff Sessions and smearing him. So there are also reports that Donald Trump has said to senators behind closed doors that he, because of his Southern accent and he talks like he has marbles in his mouth, that he is not a good defender of Republicans. And this is part of the case that he has been making against Jeff Sessions behind closed doors. There is a new book out by Bob Woodward. You may remember Woodward and Bernstein were the two journalists that really took charge during the Watergate scandal. So Woodward has come out with a new book. He does this with every president, and he spoke with former White House Staff Secretary Robert Porter in this book in a copy, I think, that was acquired by the Washington Post. And part of what they published that's supposed to be in the book is that Trump said about Sessions, quote, "This guy is mentally retarded. He is a dumb Southerner. He couldn't even be a one-person country lawyer down in Alabama." Now, keep in mind, that is a direct quote, so I don't want to see all these angry letters. I'm just reading what the president said. But this is what Trump is saying about Sessions, allegedly, according to former White House Staff Secretary Robert Porter. And Robert Porter would know, he was in a lot of those meetings when he was the staff secretary. Now, Trump has since denied saying this. He has come out and said that he never uttered those words or didn't say them exactly that way. Specifically, he's saying the quote that he said there, mentally retarded, is something that he never said. So, if a recording came out of this, would you be surprised? Just asking, because I think that that's an important question to ask yourself. If audio, an actual audio file, came out of this conversation where Trump said exactly the words that Bob Woodward's book alleged he does based on the testimony of Robert Porter, would you be surprised? Because personally, I wouldn't. Based on the things that he has said about Jeff Sessions over the past several months, and also based on the kind of person that Trump is and the way that he talks about people, honestly, it just wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me one bit if he actually said this about Jeff Sessions. Some people, I think that it might, but those are people that I personally think have rose-colored glasses when it comes to the president. I think the vast majority of the country, even several Trump supporters, if they heard this audio, they might dismiss it. They may say, oh, it doesn't matter, it doesn't change my opinion of him. But nonetheless, it wouldn't surprise them. And so while Trump is saying that this is a lie, and it might be, I don't know. Right now, it's just Robert Porter's word against his. But if this came out, it wouldn't surprise me. And so the fact that this quote is plausible, I think, says something about Trump's character and also says something about the way that he has gone after his own attorney general. And another thing that I would like to ask, because we're all people from Alabama, would you care? Would you care that he was specifically making fun of Jeff Sessions' intellectual ability, which, by the way, I don't think that Jeff Sessions is necessarily an astrophysicist, but I do think that he's a very smart individual, a very accomplished lawyer, someone who's a former attorney general of our state, someone who's been a senator for a really long time. Now, don't get me wrong, that doesn't necessarily mean you're all that brilliant. I mean, you can look at other senators and know that's not necessarily the case. Just look at Dianne Feinstein. But my point in all of that is, if you're looking at Jeff Sessions, looking at his career, the guy is, by all means, well above average when it comes to intelligence. And for him to say this and also mock the fact that he has a Southern accent, I mean, the guy does sound like he's from Alabama. That's who Jeff Sessions is. And that's never, in my mind, been something to be ashamed of. As a Southerner, as somebody from Alabama, does that comment bother you? Because Donald Trump, who's a New Yorker, has the South to thank for his very convincing victory over Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. Now, Trump has always shown kind of respect for blue-collar workers. He's not somebody that has belittled or down, talked down to people, for example, that are working in factories, people that are, you know, just working a 9-to-5, trying to make a living, trying to provide for the family. And I think in large part, that's the reason that Hillary Clinton lost and he won, because Hillary Clinton absolutely did that on a number of occasions. So that does seem at least slightly out of character, but I just don't put it past Donald Trump to have said something like this. So as a Southerner, does this matter to you? Does it bother you? I mean, you guys are all from Alabama just like me. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. 860-1440. Also, apparently he heard in this same testimony that he called Jeff Sessions a traitor over the recusal. Again, something that really doesn't surprise me if I found out that that was true. He's basically already called him a traitor just in a roundabout way in several of these tweets. And so it wouldn't surprise me. But right now, like I said, it is technically Robert Porter's word against Donald Trump's. And the question is, let's look at the source. Because we need to find out, is Robert Porter lying? And we don't know that yet. But is he lying? Well, let's consider the source. Maybe he has a bone to pick with Trump. He did get fired. Now, that firing really had nothing to do with Donald Trump himself. In fact, it had everything to do with the fact that he had allegations of violence against his wife. And so, Robert Porter, maybe he has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder from being fired from the White House, or maybe because he's now out of it and probably won't ever work in Washington again, he wants a little prestige, he wants a little fame, and talking to Bob Woodward was a great way to do that. I don't know, maybe. Those are a couple of possible motivations that he would have to just make up stories or embellish the truth when it comes to talking about Donald Trump. But on the other side of that equation, Trump actually stuck up for Robert Porter and said that he shouldn't have been fired. You remember when all of that was going down, Trump stuck up for him even when the media wasn't, and the media was talking about what a terrible person he was. So I don't know, this one's tough. Looking at the source, I mean, Porter's not exactly James Comey. He may have a bone to pick with him, but I don't think that it's quite that big a bone, and if it is a bone to pick with him, this is behavior that we've not seen out of Robert Porter before, or Omarosa, or any of the other people that are former White House staffers trying to tear down Donald Trump. So, if that's the case, it's a first. At this point, I think the correct stance to take, at least on these quotes and the things that Robert Porter is saying, is just, well, we really just don't know. And until we can confirm this by other witnesses or actually get a recording of it, which I think is unlikely, we may never know. And because we may never know, I think we have to treat this quote as though it didn't really happen. I'm not saying it's not something to consider, but just based on what I'm saying, and goodness knows, I've been pretty willing to go after the president, if you don't believe me, listen to the last segment, when he says dumb things. But this one, I'm a believer in innocent until proven guilty, and because of that, and because we have no proof that this statement ever actually happened, I think we kind of have to dismiss it until we have more substantial truth that he actually said it. Nonetheless, if it is true, I'd love to hear what you have to say on it. 860-1440. We'll be right back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
John 13:34-35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
All right, we're going to go straight to the phones. Let's go to John from Millbrook on line one. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, yeah, I've got you on now. Go ahead.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to bring up that I think that the president overlooks too, or maybe hasn't overlooked it, he just doesn't care, is that Jeff Sessions is incredibly popular as a Republican and in the Senate. And that's a problem when he gets into some of these things too politically inside there. And all that's doing is going to cause more breakup within the Republican ranks, I would think. And, you know, that's a problem. And, you know, I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, that's the thing, too. Jeff Sessions is someone who was highly, highly respected by his colleagues in the Republican Senate, and there's a lot of people there that have known him for a really long time, and when he makes these allegations that even to an outsider like me who's never actually met Jeff Sessions, is easily disprovable by doing more than 10 seconds worth of research on who Jeff Sessions is. Imagine how stupid and ridiculous that looks to a senator that's known him for 30 years.
Right. And he hasn't known the president and knows things about him, but here's my perfect scenario, okay? Jeff Sessions goes out, whether fired or resigns or whatever the situation may be, and then he runs for Senate for Alabama again.
Yeah, actually, people have floated that idea, and that is 100% possible. Now, whether or not Jeff Sessions would want to do that, I don't know if that's the case. He is getting a little up there in years. But he is perfectly eligible if he retires or resigns or whatever else it is to run to get his old Senate seat back in 2020 against Doug Jones.
Right. I think that would be the great scenario. And who knows? Maybe Ziegler could be the new attorney general.
I don't think Ziegler is going to be the new attorney general.
I don't know. Why not?
I'm not saying he wouldn't be good at his job. I'm just saying that I very much doubt that Donald Trump is all of a sudden going to randomly pull a state auditor from the state of Alabama to be the attorney general.
Yeah, well, he's
apparently he doesn't think highly of Southern people based on some of the quotes we're hearing.
Well, listen, that's his bread and butter right there. That's one of the things that he needs to watch because he's much more popular in Alabama than he is in New York.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're looking at the approval ratings of the president. They are by far highest in the South. The two states that have the largest approval rating for the president are Alabama and, in a very close second, the state of West Virginia. And then you look at the other top states that have the highest approval ratings for Trump, it's all in the South.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you don't bite the hand that feeds you, and there is no Trump presidency at all if it were not for the Deep South.
No, absolutely. And the only part of that particular quote that he specifically said that he did not say were the words mentally retarded. But I think that it would have been also very prudent for the president to say something in addendum to that. And I never made fun of his accent and, you know, something that would have been very Trump-like, like, and I love the South or something like that. Nobody loves the South more than me or something to that.
Right.
You know, but he didn't say that. And to me, that bothers me a little bit because I'm afraid, and I know that this is not necessarily, it's not good to jump to conclusions, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, does that mean he actually did make fun of his accent? Because we know for a fact, it's verified, that he's made fun of Jeff Sessions and the way he talks before. Has he specifically made fun of the fact that he has a Southern accent?
Yeah, well, that's some of that above the Mason Dixon egotism that comes out, not only in him, but in a lot of other people, too.
Yeah,
so it's automatically assumed by many people, and I'm not saying by all, but there are a lot up north that think because of our dialect and the slow drawl that we have, that obviously means you go down on the IQ meter a good bit, but there's nothing further from the truth than that.
No, and that is unfortunate, and I know that we're getting a little bit off subject here, but one thing that is funny about that, and you know that I'm somebody that studied communication in college, that this is something that's always been kind of a source of interest to me. If you're studying language and studying dialects of different English-speaking countries and different English-speaking portions of the United States, actually, and this is what's so funny about this, the closest thing to ancient Elizabethan English, in other words, the English of the 15 and 1600s, the original English after Middle English and all of that, the dialect in the world today that is closest to that form of English is actually Southern. It's more British than actual British accents.
Yeah, well, I always said that the South was dominated by former British aristocracy, really, mm-hmm. in the education that was, and that's where the speaking came from.
And that's the reason for it.
And all the Irish up north are looking down at us, which is silly if you just think about it.
Well, and that's the thing. Immigration and a lot of other dialects wound up flooding into countries like Britain, countries like Australia, and also the New England up north. And because of that, English got largely watered down with other dialects and borrowing phrases and mannerisms from other countries. that spoke other languages. And so the South actually remained, out of all the English-speaking areas in the world, the purest form, not 100% pure, obviously, but a purer form of English than other dialects around the country. And so that is funny that we're actually closer to speaking proper English than any other country or any other place in the world. But it is just a funny irony. But thank you so much for your call, John, from Millbrook. I do appreciate it. That's really the issue, though, looking at the larger picture. This feud between Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump, at very best, let's say that it's the absolute best-case scenario, the one that paints Trump in the kindest light, is still a massive waste of time. And it's wholly unproductive for the president to have this feud going back and forth between his own attorney general and people in his White House. Really, this is my summary of the entire event and the entire affair. Knock it off. This is teenage girl stuff. I would respect President Trump more if he came out and actually said, look, I think Jeff Sessions is a great guy. He's a very accomplished attorney general. But because he had to recuse himself in the Russian investigation, and because this is a really big undertaking by the Justice Department, even though there's no hard feelings between he and I whatsoever, he is unable to do the most important job of the Attorney General, and because of that, I have to let him go. And you know what? If he said that and did it in that respectful manner, Jeff Sessions would probably be okay with it. He would probably come out and say, look, I understand why the president saw that I was unable to fulfill my role as the attorney general, at least in this one capacity. And so because of that, I understand why he wanted somebody that was able to fulfill that role. Obviously, the law disqualified me from being able to do so. I understand the president wanting an attorney general that is going to be able to oversee that investigation. See, that is a possible way for that story to play out. But unfortunately, that is not what is happening here. Donald Trump is basically trying to get him to resign so it doesn't look like he's firing Jeff Sessions just to get him to fire Robert Mueller. And because of that, he's just talking about him like this and going behind his back, trying to drum up discord amongst the Senate and other Republicans against him. It's not healthy for the country. This is teenage girl stuff that happens in middle school where they're all talking behind everybody's back. Look, Mr. President, if you want to fire him, fire him. It's your constitutional ability to do so. You're the President of the United States. You have the authority under Article 2 to fire your Attorney General if you want to. So if you want to fire him, fire him. Or work with him as your duly appointed Attorney General that you put in place, by the way, and continue your professional relationship that way. But this high school garbage of trying to get him to resign and talking behind people's back, that's not good for the country. Pick one or the other. Either fire him or shut up about it. Chaplin's Report is next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 1:21. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Man, I got to tell you, I am disappointed we're not going to get to the Kavanaugh hearings because I had at least three or four sound bites that I was going to play that, just absolutely phenomenal the way that the Democrats embarrassed themselves the other day, acting like a bunch of spoiled toddlers that didn't get what they wanted. But nonetheless, I guess we'll have to forgo that. I may be able to put something up on the internet later on that. I may stream something. But nonetheless, let's go ahead and look at the chaplain's report for today because I think that this is important. We looked at a verse from Proverbs the other day, and I just read through some Proverbs the other day kind of as a follow-up to that, and one that I came across that I think is incredibly prevalent today, not just because of the subject that we've been talking about, but overall as a country. Not just regarding specifically President Trump or Jeff Sessions or all this other stuff, but just as a nation as a whole, I think this is important for us to remember. So let's look at Proverbs 15, verses 1 and 2, and look at the wisdom that Solomon has in store for us today. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. A gentle answer turns away wrath. I think that gentleness, especially in words, has become kind of a lost art. The way that we speak to one another, the way that we converse with each other, is so intentionally aggressive. I think that we have completely removed, or at least removed it to the point to where it's barely recognizable, that all communication now is unnecessarily harsh, or at least a large percentage of it. And when I read this verse, the first person that I think of is my grandmother. Not my my great-grandmother, actually. She was my grandmother's mother on my mom's side. So several generations ago, somebody who lived through the Depression, married to the same man for over 60 years, raised six children. And, I mean, just a pillar of strength around that family. And one thing that she would always do when she conversed with people is she treated them like they were important. She treated them like she genuinely cared what was going on in their life. And when people said something, she could be stern. But even when she was stern, and even when she was forced to tell people what they needed to hear, when they needed to straighten up, she did so in such a way that, I don't know, somehow it just came off as gentle. It came off as compassionate. And that's something that I think that the world needs a lot more of today, something that, frankly, I struggle with. I'm not naturally angry, but I am naturally harsh. The way that I say things is very matter-of-fact and very, frankly, unconcerned with the way other people feel about it. And that's part of what makes me good at my job. Because I can come off as objective, because I can come off as someone who doesn't necessarily have a dog in the fight, or if I do have a dog in the fight, I tell you exactly why and why I believe what I believe. But one thing that I want to learn from my great-grandmother, and that I want to emulate from the lessons that she taught me when she was alive, is I really do wish that I was better at being gentle. Because sometimes harshness is good. You can be overly gentle. Notice that he says that a gentle answer turns away wrath. Well, sometimes people do need to be angry. But we're angry all the time now. And that can't be healthy. Sometimes I think a little gentleness would go a long way. Gentleness is something that is all too often in our modern world ridiculed and ignored, and especially in our political climate today, talked about as though someone who is gentle or speaks softly is weak or doesn't care enough about the issue that's being put forward. Sometimes gentleness is a way to help the other person come to understanding, because harsh words only stir up anger. And again, sometimes people do have to be angry, but that should be used incredibly sparingly. That should be something that's only done when there is no other recourse left. Our default position, the thing that we should be using more often than not, is a gentle answer. And let's look at the second verse as well. A wise man makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. What do you mean by makes knowledge acceptable? When is knowledge not acceptable? You can be right and your approach can be wrong. What a wise person does, what a wise teacher does, is he presents information, he presents knowledge in a way that people can understand it and people can agree with it. That's part of the key of rhetoric and human communication as a whole. That we have to present things in a certain way, that presents them in a certain light that people can say, well, okay, that makes sense. You see, you can spout out all the information you want to, but if you don't do so effectively and you don't do so in a strategic way that other people can get on board with it, or if you're, to look at the verse just before it, overly harsh, people will reject it even if the information itself is good and useful. And look at the second half of that, the mouth of fools spouts folly. What do you think of when you hear the word spout? It's not intentional, there's no rhyme or reason, there's no direction, and it just overflows. It's something that there's a large quantity of whatever it is. And so the foolish people, they spout error and ignorance all over the place without direction. That's the difference in a wise man and a fool. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.